It's time to turn the spotlight on local, national, and international affairs with Mitchell Dye. Brought to you by Corio Waste Management, station sponsor.
The latest news from Finance Land with Wiley Sims from Smartline, station sponsor.
The information provided in this segment is general advice only. Listeners should seek individual advice from their accountant, financial advisor, or broker to see if the product is right for their situation. ACL number 385325.
And it's good morning to you, Wiley. How are you?
I'm great, Mitchell. Good morning to you. Good morning, Courtney. And good morning, listeners.
Good morning, Wiley.
There's a lot to get stuck into. It's good to see you once again here in the studio. What's happened with APRA limiting growth in investment lending?
Yeah, look, we've been harping on about this for some time, and the Australian Prudential Regulation Authority has been putting a lot of pressure on banks to limit their lending for investment loans to 10% of last year levels. Now, banks have all taken their own mechanisms to do that, but what we're starting to see is more and more lenders are starting to differentiate the rates between owner-occupied and investment loans, and it's really the rubber's really starting to hit the road there. What we've found is some are deciding to load investment loans and some are removing discounts. We've also found that there's more stringent investment criteria, and as I said, this policy differs from lender to lender. For example, some are limiting loan ratios from loan to value to 80%, while others are limiting it to 90%. And we've still got some that are doing 95% on investment loans if you've got an owner-occupied loan linked to that. So it's really getting quite complex. It's changing really on a weekly basis. So anyone who's considering investing would be well advised to talk to their broker and make sure that they're on the right product, because what may be appropriate this week, because there's so much moving in this market at the moment with the policies, it changes very, very quickly. So please note that if you're considering any investment, it is being pushed by the Australian Prudential Regulation Authority. And for some people, we might find we've got a gift for them, or not a gift, but they can actually get their money back. You may recall a couple of years ago, Mitch, that the federal government brought in a first home buyer's savings incentive scheme where they were actually adding 17% to the annual repayments up to $6,000 and capping the tax rate on those accounts at 15%. Well, as of the 1st of July, this scheme was abolished. So anyone who's got money in those accounts can actually access that. And there's around about 50-odd thousand Australians who've done that, and maybe some people around Geelong area who've got money in that, so they can access that if they want to use some of that money for deposits at the moment. So the average balance across the whole scheme is around about 12,000, which is a bit short for what people would need for a deposit. But nevertheless, it would be helpful if anyone knows that they can access that money if they've been stowing it away there.
Has that been mainly a cost savings measure by the government to abolish that, or is people just not taking it up?
The take-up was much lower than was expected, because they were anticipating around about 750,000 people would take it up. Now, even though the take-up rate was very low, it's a bit of a puzzle to me why more people didn't access it, because carrying on from last week when we were talking with Dennis, we were talking about the Emeritus Professor of Economics from Sydney University put in a submission to the government claiming that housing was really an equity issue and what we should be looking at is a form of shelter rather than in form of capital growth.
Yep.
And they were advocating that the government use equity in the home loan and that the purchaser repay that back over time,
right,
in order to bridge the deposit gap. And that's the trouble that most people seem to have, is this deposit gap. So it would seem something like a first home buyer savings scheme would be really of a lot of use for a lot of people. Now, maybe it wasn't promoted well, I don't know, but I do get a lot of customers coming to me with reasonably good incomes.
Yeah.
Because they're in this rental kind of lock situation, they can't get enough deposit to enable them to make that step into the first home, and that's a real tragedy for all of us.
Well, there's a housing affordability inquiry, is there?
Well, the inquiry was stemmed from that, but just a couple of other conflicting things. We've been getting a lot of economists and others telling us that there's no housing bubble, but one person of note which is suggesting that we may be in for a bit of a rebalancing of the housing market is the former economic advisor to Julia Gillard, Stephen Koukakis. And He said that he believes that there's going to be a decline of around about 20% in housing values when this correction comes through. And he's based that on this huge jump that we've had in the Sydney market in the last 12 months of 17.8%. And again, 11.2% growth in the Melbourne market in the last 12 months. And clearly that's unsustainable. So even though 20% would strike fear into a lot of recent purchases, but anyone who's purchased longer than 2 years ago would really be just bringing the values back to around about 2012, 2013 values. So it's like everything, there are peaks and troughs in the market. There is bound to be some correction at some time. If we knew when that was going to occur, we'd all be the wiser for it and probably a lot wealthier for it. But it will happen at some point in time, and let's hope it's not 20%, and maybe it's a soft correction. And I think a lot of this APRA move about limiting investment is really just trying to soften that when the eventual correction comes, and it may be something like a Greek economic crisis. I mean, there's a lot of noise overnight about it's all solved and all wonderful. I'll see it when I believe it, like reading the fine print on the Parthenon, I think there's going to be a lot of water under the bridge with that issue. And I think, as we mentioned before, the greater concern for us is the stock market situation in China, which has really got far more effect on our economy than the Greek situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, that housing crash, you're saying maybe forecast, you haven't really seen much evidence of it actually happening yet?
No, there's no evidence of it, and certainly the auction reports that have been happening the last few weeks are showing that things are bubbling along. Admittedly, there's not a lot of stock out there in winter, which tends to keep prices up. Clearance rates are still 75% to 80% across the board in Victoria, very strong, and demand is really exceeding supply, and while that situation remains, it's likely that we're going to find a fairly buoyant housing market.
Now, this week's suburb that we're having a look at is Bell Park. How are things going there? What's the property price trend?
Yeah, well, I had a look at Bell Park. We've found recent sales are around about 350, although there may be the odd property that you can pick up still with a bit of a bargain less than that. It offers a lot of value because it's got established facilities, hospital and golf course, and of course very close to the city, so anyone who's patient, who's purchasing property there, whether they're owner, occupier or investor, is going to do well. I did a number crunch on that. With a $40,000 deposit, you'd be paying around about $1,660 per month at 4.19%, which is probably the best deal we could get for you at the moment. That's assuming that you're already been a homeowner, of course, a little bit better for first home buyers.
Is that a three bedroom?
That would be based on a three or four, just depends on the market.
Yep.
Four bedrooms, I think, are around about 360, three bedroom for 330 from memory.
All right.
But again, go to your friendly real estate agent, I'll give you better advice than I can there.
True.
The interesting thing is rent for the same property is around about $1,430 a month. So for people that can find that deposit gap, and that's the challenge I think we've got, and really, you know, I would be happy if everybody who wants a home in Geelong and who's renting can get out of that rental cycle and get themselves into a home. Most people that are renting are struggling to get that deposit, but we can see that with the low interest rates, rental and repayments are very, very similar. $200 a month, $50 a week, not a huge amount to get into your own home and have the security of knowing that that property is yours moving forward, and you're not looking over your shoulder maybe having to find another property because the agent decides to up the rent or sell the property from underneath you.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good deal, but at the same time, if you ask someone on an average income to get a $40,000 deposit together, that's a pretty big ask if the average income is about $47,000 or thereabouts.
Yeah, and as I said, that comes back to why I'm a bit bemused why this first home buyer savings system was actually canned, because that seems to be the challenge that I'm seeing a lot of people coming to me with, that they've got the cash flow to service a loan, but they're struggling to get that deposit gap. And particularly people that aren't first-home buyers, that can't get any leverage in the market in terms of the first-home buyer's grant if they're not building.
Now, the new financial year, that's just recently got underway, and as a result, we've seen quite a few self-employed people starting to look for home loans.
Yeah, interestingly, I had a phone call coming in this morning from a self-employed person who's going to have a chat to me in another month because they're doing their tax at the moment. And I just thought, for being a new financial year, self-employed people are often reviewing their situation, particularly if they've got home loans and other loans, and maybe they can do a little bit better with the interest rate. So I just thought we'd go through the difference between pay-as-you-earn borrowers and self-employed, and just have a look at some of the criteria.
Well, tell us about that, yeah.
Well, first of all, if you're a pay-as-you-earn in terms of proving your income, for most people, they simply need their two most recent payslips showing their year-to-date salary or their group certificate. But it becomes a lot more complicated when you're self-employed. The lender is going to put a little bit more scrutiny on that loan, and normally, in most situations, they're going to require 2 years tax returns done by an accountant and your Australian Tax Office assessment notices. They would require personal returns for any owner of the business, as well as the business tax returns. Now, for a lot of people, this is daunting, and not everyone's going to have it available. One of the problems that we've got as brokers is that the tax people, your accountant who does most of the tax for most small businesses, is trying to minimise the tax situation. And my accountant does that for me, thankfully. Mm. But that becomes problematic when you're trying to get a loan, because what happens is your income looks lower because your income's dispersed in legal ways to minimise your tax burden. So we have to look at things called add-backs, and which means that we've got to dig into these financial statements.
Yeah, so tell us about what add-backs are.
Well, basically, add-backs are where we've got expenses that the business can use as tax-deductible expenses, which reduces income. It can be things like car allowance, depending on the kind of business that you're in, but things like depreciation on plant and equipment. Any interest expense that is being refinanced. So if you're actually refinancing a home or a business, that expense is actually discounted. If you are contributing to superannuation over and above the minimal amount that you need to do, the 9 or 10% as it is at the moment, then they are tax deductible. And any non-recurring expenses. For example, if you've gone out and purchased major plant, or you've had repairs or maintenance on plant and equipment that would be a one-off situation, then they're non-recurring, and these are all add-backs. So these are factored back in as income and assist in servicing the loan, and that's why we need those 2 years' tax returns, and it's a bit more complex when we're doing loans for self-employed people.
But I suppose some people in small business may not have their taxes all completely up to date. What happens if they don't actually have an accountant preparing their tax return, if they just decide to DIY?
Well, basically, we need the tax returns back from the tax department, so we'd still have to get those tax returns as they were lodged, and we'd need the actual assessment notices coming back as well. Can still be done, but depends on lenders' policies. We've even got one lender who's quite happy to prepare to take 12 months. Provided the business has been trading for 2 years,
yep.
The last 12 months business statements based on accounting software like MYOB. But again, that's a policy that is peculiar to one particular lender. Not all lenders are the same. But for most people, if they don't have their tax ready and their tax done, the way out of it is what's called a low doc loan. And the low document loans generally have got some loading on them because the assessment is done on things like BAS statements, or in some situations, depending on the loan-to-value ratio, if it's below 60%, for example, we've got one lender who will simply accept a statement from the borrower that their income is Z, provided they've got an accountant's letter saying that that's a reasonable assessment of the business turnover in the last 12 months.
Okay, that's interesting. So if they've got that deposit right to go, and it's a fair amount, then they're right.
Yeah, but again, it's that's one particular lender's policy. They differ from lender to lender, and so it depends very much on the individual situation as to which lender we would approach. But these low doc loans are what we call solution-based. The problem is that we will get some people coming to us with short-term self-employment. That becomes a little bit of a challenge as well. People who haven't had their businesses for 12 months, and unfortunately, although we can get loans for them, they're going to be rather expensive options because they do have quite a loading on them for risk. Because let's face it, if you've been in business 6 months, well, is the business going to last? We don't know. So the lender would look at that a little bit sceptically and load it up with a couple of extra percentage points. I'm not talking about basis points there, but I'm talking full percentage points,
yeah,
in terms of that risk. But that's what we call solution-based lending. It's to get someone around a situation, and later on, once they've got their tax done and they've been trading for some time and they've got stable income, we can refinance them into a far better option.
So are all low-doc loans pretty much the same?
Not really, Mitch. I mean, I can get some that are very close to base rate. But again, the criteria for those would need justification like the last two BAS statements to prove income. So although the income is not proved by 2 years' tax returns, it's proven by the latest BAS statements through the tax returns that the business has had to pay.
Now, what about specials this week? What have we got?
Well, we mentioned last week that Westpac's got this 85% special on loan-to-value ratio, where they will pay the lender's mortgage insurance. As we said, we've now got four lenders who will pay lender's mortgage insurance up to 85%. That can save thousands, but wait for it, Mitch. Here's a good one. This is exclusive to Smartline. If you do a Westpac loan with Smartline at the moment, we can get an additional 1.05% off the home loan only through Smartline brokers. So our general manager's been working very hard with Westpac there, and we've negotiated that. That's not going to last forever, so if anyone is interested in doing loans with Westpac, have a talk to your local Smartline broker there. That is not through every brokerage house. Westpac has waived their application fee until further notice, which is good news for anyone who's looking at a Bank West loan. Suncorp has waived their package fee until the end of the year, saving $375 a year for the life of the loan. That works out at over $11,000 for the life of the loan over 30 years. It's assuming there's no increase in that package fee, which I'm sure will increase in the next decade or so. So that's a very good and genuine saving. And again, ANZ and Bank of Melbourne are both offering rebates for owner-occupying refinance. So there's a lot of specials out there, some good deals to be got, Mitchell. And if anyone's interested in having a chat, or anyone in small businesses considering refinancing or indeed purchasing a home, give us a call on 1300 280 342 and happy to give an obligation-free assessment of their lending capabilities.
Very good. And next week, what do you think we'll be talking about?
Next week, I think we might go back and have a look at maybe one of the coastal suburbs. And next week, I think we might start talking about maybe some asset finance while we're on the small business market in the new financial year as well.
One suburb I'd be interested in doing, I don't know if you've done this with Dennis, would be Central Geelong. And just wondering what's happening there, because we're talking about trying to get more and more people to actually live in the CBD of Geelong. And I just wonder what's happening with property prices there.
Okay, well, how about we do that next week? We'll do 3220 Central Geelong. I think we're going to find a few shocks with some of the values, because they're a bit all over the place depending on their Central Geelong and Central Geelong.
And of course, you've got apartments, you've got townhouses, so I think it'd be interesting.
And any of those that are on the Esplanade, of course, are going to fetch premium prices compared to others that are in other areas. So it's rather probably a little bit more complex than some, but we'll do the number crunch on that and tell our listeners what they'll need to buy the median property in Geelong.
Good on you. Thanks, Wiley. Chat to you next week.
Cheers, Mitch.
Thank you. Wiley Sims there from Smartline.
The information provided in this segment is general advice only. Listeners should seek individual advice from their accountant, financial advisor or broker to see if the product is right for their situation. ACL number 385325.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.